Hey everyone, welcome to episode 31 of your favorite podcast, Techish, featuring yours truly, Abba Jesse, author of Dream Big, Hustle Hard,
and Michael Bain, CEO of People of Color Tech.com. I don't have a book, unfortunately, but one is coming out soon.
One day, Techish one the day. Coffee table book.
Yeah, there we go.
A photo exploration of people of color in tech.
It would just be me posing and whatnot, anyway.
Swimsuit edition.
Yeah, and we can't forget our wonderful sponsors. Take it away, guys.
Michael and I both know how hard it is starting out as first-time founders with a limited network and little access to capital.
That's why we want to thank OneTech for sponsoring this episode of Techish. They are doing fantastic work supporting underrepresented tech founders in London, helping to change the face of startups in the city.
One of their main goals is to double the number of female and Black and minority ethnic-led tech startups raising investment through their parent entity, Capital Enterprise.
They do this by connecting underrepresented entrepreneurs together and supporting them via mentorship, workspace, access to pre-accelerators, and helping them get investment ready.
So if you're in London, just starting out, and in need of support, go to weareonetech.org and apply now.
And tell them Techish sent you. Blockstack is an open source network and development platform that makes it easy to build decentralized apps that can scale today.
With Blockstack, users own and are in control of their information. And you know we care a lot about privacy at Techish.
Yep, we do. And they're running a program called App Mining that rewards developers building apps on their platform, paying out $100K each month across all registered apps.
Explore more about the program by going to app.co/mining.
I have to rename this podcast the Anti-VC Podcast because the next story is...
Don't say that.
No, it's not the case.
We've had like two VCs on the podcast.
I love VCs, man. I love... No, I was thinking like, why do I intrinsically, though, have a problem with VCs? And I think...
Because haters go hate.
Because haters go hate. Because they ain't writing me a check. No, I'm joking. No, because like, I grew up... I wanted to become an entrepreneur, I think, because I have an intrinsic distaste for middlemen and for gatekeepers. So I never like being told what to do. So when I came into entrepreneurship and I saw that there was this collective group of people that were raised up and they weren't entrepreneurs themselves and they were venerated in a way where it was like, these are the chosen ones and they will bequeath to you the right to partake in this game.
Who
the hell are you people? Because to me, in a healthy ecosystem, and no disrespect to any famous VCs. I love so many of them. I love Arlen Hamilton. I love some of them. Like Jason Calacanis has taught me a lot through his podcast. That
he's a good This Week in Startups.
Yeah, This Week in Startups is a good podcast. Whatever. He says a lot of dumb things also.
About
shout out to him,
right? Deals.
Yeah. I love a lot of these famous VCs in terms of what they've taught me. But at the same time, I almost feel like in a healthy ecosystem, we wouldn't know who they are. As in, why are they rock stars? Like, the entrepreneur and the founding team and the CTO and the first marketing hire and the box-standard employee of this company that took Slack to wherever, or Airbnb to wherever. These should be the people that we're venerating, not the person who is writing the check, if that makes any sense. But anyways, I digress.
We're glorifying the source of the money instead of the source of the innovation and ideas.
So anyway, that was a massive tangent. So So and you're going to be like, how does this story even relate? So anyway, there was a great article that what VCs often tell you, which is that you need two co-founders. The data doesn't bear that out. You only need, well, you don't only need, statistically speaking, one founder can oftentimes do much better than what is recommended, which is two co-founders. Now, even, for example, like YC, I think even like YC.
Yeah. Paul Graham actually has an essay about this.
Right. They won't even let you in. They only want to back two co-founders, essentially, minimum.
Yeah, they make exceptions, but it's very, very rare.
Right, exactly. So the common thesis is that you need more than one person per team. Which makes sense. Obviously, if you're building a software startup, you might want an engineering person and you might want a business development person and a salesperson. So I kind of understand the logic behind it. But it's not borne out by the data. It actually says here that, and I can speak on this firsthand because I've been in a situation where we started Pocket, peopleofcolorandtech.com, with two co-founders, myself and Ruth, who was amazing. I'm not going to cuss Ruth whatsoever. It's nothing to do with that. But it's more of the principle of when you have co-founders, it's like a marriage. And not everyone is going to have the same vision in a marriage of what their life is going to be like. It'll all get twisted, right? And sometimes that tension can make the situation unworkable. And you might have to just say, listen... And this wasn't what happened with me and Ruth. We just parted ways because she had different priorities and she wanted to do other things, which is fair enough. But I've also been in previous situations as well where I've seen other co-founders and it's like, you have to get a divorce and that can kill the baby. I've heard so many stories of people, of co-founders separating and a great idea is left by the wayside. And one co-founder's like, well, you can't keep on working on this because this was my baby as well. And I'm like, whoa, that was an amazing idea though. So why have you stopped? Anyways.
I mean, this article says solo founders. So this is MIT, MIT Sloan School.
So it must be true. MIT, baby. Yeah, it must be true. MIT said it.
Solo founders are twice as likely to succeed in business as co-founders. So maybe it's time venture capitalists reconsider their assumptions about what makes a dream team. I think what's really interesting about this as well is, like, again, like, I feel like this season is going to be all about me talking about power and, like, how we think about power. But
season three, power.
Power! 50 Cent's gonna be angry. He'll be like, yo, Abba, I got a show called Power. You gotta sue us. Slap down.
Sorry, Fiddy.
Anyway, sorry, Fiddy. I'll meet you in the club. What I was gonna say was, basically, VCs, right, because they do hold the purse strings, they get to say a lot of things as if those things are science or facts, right, or best practice, when a lot of those things are actually just, like, driven by their own motivations or incentives. And when you read about why two founders are better from one from VCs, and when I've had conversations with VCs in the past, so, for example, I was an incubator similar to you. I started Hustle Crew with Natalie. Natalie's priorities changed when she went to Oxford Internet Institute. So I became a solo founder, and I remember the investor partners being like, you need to find another co-founder. You need to replace her ASAP. Like, I don't know if we can keep working with you if you don't find her.
Wow.
In the absence of having the extra resource, I just, like, leaned into contractors and interns, right, and stuff like that. Yeah. But I was actually able to, like, make decisions a lot quicker because there, yep, was no tension. And, you know, even at Product Hunt, for example, like, I work with Ryan Hoover and he's a solo founder. And I think what VCs don't really admit is the reason why, and some of them actually do admit this when you push them, the reason why they prefer to have more than one co-founder is because people are really likely to quit in the first few years of a startup, right?
Right.
And when you invest in something and there's only one founder and then they quit, that's your money gone.
Yeah.
But if you invest in something and there's more than one founder and one founder quits, there's still someone to keep it running.
Completely. Or if one gets hit by a bus.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or whatever. So, like, it's actually kind of, like, selfish.
Of course.
In terms of protecting their investment, right, but not necessarily, like, oh, it is a truth in terms of who will succeed. And I'm so glad this research comes out because I know a lot of people who are solo founders and they just cannot find a co-founder, like, particularly from our communities, because there's so much that's required to work on a startup full time in terms of financial security and freedom and all this kind of stuff. And it makes me really sad when I see people in forums or in our communities talking about being turned down from investment because they can't find a co-founder. It's like, look, I have tried, I can't do it, but I've still been able to get an MVP, go to market, create monthly recurring revenue, right, despite all of those things, and you still won't give me money?
Right.
That's annoying. It's
annoying. And I think, because, like I said, I believe that a co-founder relationship is like a marriage. It's very difficult to just, like, create that out of thin air.
Agreed.
So to say to an entrepreneur who's built a product, who has got a vision, oh, just go find a co-founder. Bro, that's like saying to me, go find a wife overnight. Like, that's not necessarily going to happen. I'm not going to necessarily find somebody with the same chemistry or that is aligned with my vision. Now, the article, one thing, you know, because you know in TechEdge, we got to do second layer analysis. So their data is based off Kickstarter founders. So Kickstarter founders are normally, and this is a massive generalization, but I feel like Kickstarter founders are not always working on software products. They're working on
hardware
or stuff, like content, for example. And that situation, I can understand why a solo founder makes more sense. Mm. Now, with software, if you don't have a CTO on your team, so if you're a business development CEO type person, it makes it a lot more expensive for the investor. So if I give you 200K to run a company and you're a solo founder who's just a business salesperson, you've got to then hire an engineer.
Mm.
And then you've got to keep paying that person's salary.
That's true.
Or get a contractor and the money burns quicker.
Yeah.
So there is an internal logic. I'm not disputing why VCs think this way, but I just want there to be, I'm glad this data exists because I want there to be a counterpoint which says, actually, let's slow down and think about it. And not just work on what we've always done.
Yeah.
And so much in life, and most of the mistakes in life happen is because this is how it's always been done.
Yep.
Right. And that's my thoughts on it, really.
History repeats itself, people. Let's challenge the narrative.
What you know about Soulja Boy? What you know about Soulja Boy?
Soulja Boy, tell him!
did you know the dance move?
Yeah, of course, man. Look at me doing it now.
Do you know, I almost did it with him. So he came to my university.
Why are you lying?
I swear to you.
Why are you lying?
So basically, he came to my university and he came on the stage and he was doing the Crank That Soulja Boy dance. And, like, I always used to do it because I was like, bear in mind, I'm going to age myself. So I was like 18 when the song came out.
Mm-hmm.
I was a grown-ass person, you get me? But I was still in the club doing it like a little kid. And my boy's like, go up, man, he's performing. Go up, do it with him. I was like, I'm not sure.
In the end,
I didn't do it. And I'm glad I didn't do it because apparently, because what happened is I knew the first part of the dance, but there's a whole other part of the dance that I didn't know. And about three people went on stage with him and they did the second part of the dance and I would have been there just stuck by my other...
That's like, that's like when I forget the candy dance halfway through, and I'm like, oh, which way people moving?
I'm after revoking black card for that one. How can you not know the electric slide? I'm after to teach you that. All right, we can teach you after this. Don't watch
that. Don't hate on me. My dad never danced.
It's okay. It's all good. So, anyways, yeah, he's gone viral again because he was on the Breakfast Club. And he's such a meme.
What's the Breakfast Club for people who don't know?
So the Breakfast Club is the morning radio show in the States with Charlamagne Tha God, DJ Envy, Angela Yee. It's like the number one hip-hop radio show.
Oh, cool. We need a UK version.
Yeah, we do need a UK version.
Don't worry, Tekish will sort it out.
So he went on there and he was just like so memeable when he was just talking about he had the best comeback of 2018, even though he never even released a song. But what he did say on that show, on that interview, which a lot of people now have to be like, you know what? I have to give him credit for, is the fact that he was a pioneer. And listen, let me break this down. Do you know what he used to do? Do you remember LimeWire? Do you ever used to download tracks from LimeWire?
Maybe.
Yeah, so okay. Allegedly, we used to. Allegedly.
Maybe we did.
The police are still after us. So anyways, back in the day, like, he was an internet pioneer. He pioneered this MySpace thing, this whole internet rapper thing. And what he used to do is he used to name his track after popular song. So you'd go in there and be like, let me type in Get Rich or Die Trying or 50 Cent in the Club. Mm. You download it and you'd play it and it would be his track.
What that's
you
hear is so you smart.
Then there'll be like you'd hear the intro of the Soldier Boy song. Like, yeah, you'd be like, what the hell is this? Now, when you're doing this entrepreneurship thing, you hear about growth hacks all the time. That's you hear smart. About, you know, you got to think on your feet. You know what I mean? And that is just old school hustle, like just straight from the hood, making it happen by any means necessary. And I love it. So shout out to Soulja Boy. And he's even like released a video games console.
I was going to say, I thought that's what we were focusing on.
No.
The tech part.
No. That is a tech part though.
Hardware product release.
That's a growth hack. That's okay, tech cool. part.
Well,
that's...
I'm just saying, Soulja Game handheld. I feel like we could introduce a review section for tech-ish founders. All I'm saying,
you got to send me a free copy.
Yeah, of course, man. I'm just saying, I wanna play with Soulja Game handheld. You know, it'd be so funny if it like gets charged by doing the crank that motion, like perpetual motion technology. So you never have to plug it in; you just crank that.
If you made crank that, yeah. The next story I want to talk about is something that popped up quite a while ago, but now there's a few documentaries about it. So, do you remember the Fire Festival?
Fire,
but it wasn't a good
May, I remember like. The only thing I remember from Fire Festival, well, the most prominent thing I remember is like a photo that went viral on Twitter of the lunch. And it was like a paper plate with like a slice of white bread and like a few strands of iceberg lettuce. And someone was like, I paid over $1,000 for this ticket. And
people
this is
were
my
like,
lunch.
Help me, we're stuck on the island.
Oh, yeah, actually, that's. I shouldn't laugh.
No, we should, because it's like, come on, if you're that rich, dude, and you get. I have no sympathy for rich people that get scammed like that.
Gosh.
So, to give the background, so Fire Festival was meant to be essentially like a Coachella on the beach.
Nice.
It was hyper expensive. It was going to be some exclusive island. There's going to be all these amazing acts.
Ja Rule!
Ja Rule! There was going to be like a whole bunch of Instagram celebrities that were going to be there. The whole thing was meant to be amazing. They had this amazing photography, and the tickets were hyper expensive.
Mm.
And.
In the Bahamas, luxury getaway, right. Gourmet food, anything you can dream of, right? Millennial paradise.
Literally, right. Yeah, you'd be able to stunt on the ground for real with this thing. But it turned out the whole thing was a fraud. People turned up. There was no way of leaving. There was no music. There was no infrastructure. There was no food. There was no staff. There was no nothing. And people were literally tweeting like, oh my God, we're stuck on this island.
This is literally a scam that like even the quote unquote Nigerian princes could not even dream up. You know what I mean?
No, but you know what? The thing is, you have to look a certain way to put off this scam. And what
That's
I mean
what
by
I'm
that.
Saying.
Yeah. So basically the guy behind it, I think he even had an app that was related to it. He raised a whole bunch of money from investors for this project. And he did it literally off, you know, a smile and white privilege, if you get what I'm saying. He just had that confident white male privilege. Just walked in there and he was like, guys, this is the business plan.
And
somehow he just walked away with millions of dollars. But you know what I mean? Where there's so many entrepreneurs out here hustling, building six-figure businesses, bootstrapping real revenues, and they can't get a dime.
Yeah.
Anyways, he now consequently faced charge. I think he might even be in jail or maybe on some kind of probation. Probably in probation. I doubt he's gone to jail, but he's in the legal system somehow.
Mm.
But now there's a few documentaries about it. And the reason why I want to talk about it apart from the fact that there's a Netflix documentary coming out about it, is the fact that he leveraged a lot of Instagram influencers to make this happen.
Mm.
And I feel like it's almost a metaphor for the influencer culture that we have now, in the sense that we're all striving to achieve a lifestyle that is shown to us by these influencers that doesn't even exist.
Of course.
Just like in real life, you'll go to that beach and it's not there. We're all striving to get to this beach and it's not really, there's nothing there when you get there. Do you see what I'm saying?
And
it's so easy to pull this off. Like, all you have to do is just offer a bit of money to these influencers, and all of a sudden, everyone is, like, desperate to go to this thing that's not even It's not even real.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is so, so upsetting on so many levels, like you said. Before I even jump into, like, the role that influencers play in our society right now, and also, like, our willful ignorance and, like, buying into the lies that, that they support, I just think this McFarlane guy is, like you said, just one of the most, like, despicable types of characters that we have about right now. Like you said, like, he's a scam artist of the next level, right? Next level. And I think what's really frustrating is that we tend to, like, create these, like, personas of, like, what we find safe or, like, believable or, like, we rely on. Exactly. And he just totally murked that. You know what I mean? Like, he was just like, yeah, I am going to exploit this. Like, he just milked that privilege. He milked that status. And he was able to just con so many people out of their money. At the time, he showed no remorse. Apparently, he was literally just, like, in a penthouse with his friends, partying hard on jet skis, being like, oh, no, we've messed up. Oh, well, like, popping bottles or whatever. Ultimately, the law caught up with him. He was sentenced to 6 years in prison. He's still writing from prison. November 2018, I saw an article in Refinery29. He actually, like, released a statement basically apologizing. But it came late. Like, how late?
Yeah.
Thank you. And then the point around influencers, yeah, you're so right. Like, we put a lot of trust into the people we follow. You know, we sort of spend every day with them to some extent. They're almost like the friends we don't know.
Completely.
So, you know, they're keeping us motivated as we try to reach our goals. We're getting our diet advice from them, our health advice from them, even our relationship advice from them. And then when we've got to that level of trust and they then say, oh, spend $1,000 on a ticket for this, suddenly what might otherwise be an extortionate amount of money seems worth it because there's someone who we believe in and who we trust who's telling us that that's okay and that's what we can do. And as you said, that is so dangerous. You know, ultimately, an influencer does not have your back, right? An influencer is just an evolution of a publishing platform, right?
Literally.
So just like the way you're reading the news with a pinch of salt, you got to be reading those influencer pages with a pinch of salt as well.
It's worse than that. It's like, you know, back in the day, you'd see like a celebrity sponsor, toothpaste. Hi, I'm so-so, and this toothpaste is amazing.
Yeah.
Look at that and be like, okay, this person.
You don't use that.
Yeah, you don't want to use that. Like, that has no credibility to you.
Yeah.
But now, all of a sudden, if an influencer is like, casually being like, oh, I love these trainers. Hint, hint. Will, I need to get those as well, kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
That's just where the market is, and that's just where we all are in terms of our psychology. Right now, maybe in 10, 20 years, we're all going to be jaded and not really necessarily buy into that kind of strategy. But at the moment, it works.
The question is, how do we make sure something like Fyre Festival doesn't happen again? What have we learned?
You say we, but to be honest, the people that were scammed, the entrepreneur, the investors, and the consumers, I don't think they've learned anything because this has happened almost a year ago. I haven't seen the culture shift. Culture is bigger than ever. Tech bros are still getting funded with very little actual, you know, a lot of times with any real metrics or anything like that.
Yes.
Or any real, you know, substantial credibility.
Yes.
So I think there is, you know, just like Theranos, which is a completely different situation, but, you know, there is some similarities on the surface level.
Yeah.
It will keep happening. I don't see... Do you know what I mean? And we're going to all be out here, and I'm talking to entrepreneurs every day that come up to me because of the platform that I run, and they're like, yo, like, we've got this business, we're doing this.
Yeah.
We can't raise any money. We can't find any investors, even though we've got growth up and to the right.
Mm.
And I don't know what to say to them. I'm like, guys,
I'll
intro you. Boy,
scams are like, the new capital.
I'll be like, hire a white co-founder and just, like, send him to the meetings. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
In a way, though, like, a scam is a scam is a scam, right? Like, some people say ICOs.
They were a scam. They were scams. There were some that were legitimate scams, and there were some that were actual, just like, you know, they might as well have been scams, even if they were had good intentions.
And then, like you said, Theranos, another scam.
Yeah.
What was it? Enron, another scam.
Right.
Scams are as old.
Brexit, another scam.
don't mention that word on the show, Michael. Yeah.
What's Brexit?
I'm triggered. I don't know. But a scam is a scam is a scam. They're like ingrained in human DNA, and they're just going to always evolve, and we're always going to find ways. Skinny teas. The skinny tea scandal. We can't talk about influencers scamming people.
Break that down for me. I always see it, but because obviously as a dude, wow. I don't follow as many Instagram influencers that might peddle that. But what is skinny tea and what is this flat tummy tea? Explain it to me.
Seriously, man. Okay, so first of all, I don't even know how it gets to be called that without advertising standards getting involved and shutting that down. So it is a tea which claims to make you thin by repressing your appetite. Oh, now, I think it does actually contain some ingredients, both natural and like maybe like man-made, which will suppress your appetite. So you don't eat as much and then hopefully you lose weight, whatever, I don't know. Or maybe not so hopefully because you may be underweight, whatever. Now, the real evil side of it comes into the way they were actually targeting these ads. So what they were doing was trying to say, like, who are the most insecure women on the platform? And what they could identify was that actually, like, adolescent women, teenagers, girls, really teenage girls, are still in that stage where they're quite impressionable.
Right.
They're still almost children. Mm. So what people were doing was getting influencers that have a huge Gen Z teenage girl following, using them to advertise these skinny teas, these flat tummy teas. I mean, even Kim Kardashian's used them.
Yeah, I remember she got in trouble.
And now parents are like complaining to authorities and saying, my 13-year-old daughter is not eating. She's severely underweight. She's worrying about what she looks like and all this kind of stuff because she did this ridiculous skinny tea campaign or this flat tummy tea campaign. And that, again, one, is a scam because, you know, the healthiest way to manage your body is to just eat what your body needs as far as nutrients and exercise and live a healthy lifestyle.
Right.
Stopping yourself from eating is not going to do you any good. And particularly if you're still growing, you shouldn't be compromising your health like that.
Right.
I mean, you could be like, you know, really shortening your lifespan.
But I mean, even trying to explain that to adults is difficult. So trying to explain that to a child.
And that's so scary. And then It's not just like the product itself and how it's branded and how it's mislabeled. It's just like the extent of the manipulation. And again, it was leaning into influencers, leaning into the power of influencers, very targeted Instagram and other social media campaigns.
Mm.
And we're all just here letting it happen, watching it happen. I don't even know what the investors of those companies are thinking. Maybe some of those investors, this was their idea. I don't know. Or they're turning a blind eye to it. But like you said, like that's so not cool, and we need to like question these things and not let them happen.
Yeah, I was reading some research about the impact of smartphones on teenagers essentially, and the depression and suicide rate for young girls has gone through the roof. The impact of, and it's starting younger and younger, the impact on smartphones on young boys, really. If you give smartphones to young boys, they'll probably spend times doing things like porn, gaming, which can actually be quite social sometimes because now you can play online gaming.
Whereas I thought you were going to say porn can be social. No, like, that's okay, a stretch. That's a stretch.
Not more, the gaming aspect is social. But the with young girls, what they found is they tend to congregate around these kind of, you know, looking for validation, looking for like my post type thinking and just pushing out content to the world and waiting for a response.
Mm.
And it does terrible to grown-ass folks, and it does terrible things to a young mind. So,
of course.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, if I had a young child at this age, I don't know whether I'd give them a smartphone. Most of the CEOs of these tech companies don't give their children access to this technology. Chamath said it, the former Facebook executive.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs was notorious for that.
Yeah.
I think even Tim Cook has said that about his nephew.
Yeah.
So it's like,
I want to hear it, yeah.
Are these the cigarette manufacturers not letting their kids smoke and peddling it to the rest of the world? I don't know.
I would love to hear from parents listening, hashtag techish,
what strategies do you...
How do you manage your kids' relationship with technology? I think for me, I don't have kids yet, like hopefully one day I will. And I think for me, I would definitely limit it. But I also feel that like learning self-control is like really important. But I also understand that point, like, when you're really young, it's just difficult to have those boundaries. And also, I remember like having such intense roller coasters of emotions during my teens because your brain and your body are changing so much at that time.
Right.
All these hormones flying around. I remember one day I'd be depressed. I want to die. No one understands me. The next day I'd be like, oh, yay, this song perfectly understands me. I'm going to write all the lyrics on my Converse or whatever. Like, I don't know, it's a very volatile period of life. And I think what's most upsetting to me is that the system of capitalism we have now means that there are certain people who are incentivized to like monopolize on that emotional instability for the pursuit of profit. And that's so messed up.
I mean, it's always been the case. And now it's just easier than ever, basically.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah. So you wanted stability. So you chose the life of a startup CEO. Interesting.
I'm not saying I make sense, man. Okay. I'm not saying I make sense.
Put it there, that one. So yeah, this is like close friend of mine is in trouble actually. Like, he's not really a close friend
of
mine.
Well, actually, I'm quite close to Bay.
Are you? Yeah. So the person, if you haven't guessed already, is Jay-Z. Actually, I don't know how you would have guessed that. But anyways, Jigga is in trouble because apparently Tidal was under investigation.
I was really sad to hear this.
I mean, it's only an investigation. There hasn't been any, you know, there hasn't been a conviction or even any charges brought forth. The allegation is the streaming numbers have been overly inflated.
Yes, and that, falsified.
Some sort of falsified lies. So apparently some journalists looked into it and that's what's prompted the investigation. I was confused though because I was thinking to myself, why would a streaming platform inflate the streams? Because then it would mean they'd have to pay out more, if that makes any sense.
Keep the shareholders happy, show growth month on month.
Growth. And also, like, Tidal has this thing where they lock in certain artists for exclusive distribution. So, like, if you're Kanye West. And
that's true, Beyonce Lemonade.
Exactly right. So, how do you keep Beyonce's record label happy or Kanye's record label happy? You got to say, oh, we're getting this amount of streams.
We're getting more than Spotify.
We're getting more than Spotify.
And Apple Music.
Right, it's worthwhile for you to stay on the platform. So there is an incentive. Whether it's true or not, that is the question. I hope it's not true because, you know, I don't want to see, you know, my boy Jay get caught up in trouble like this. But,
yeah.
When they acquired Tidal back in the day for like $50 million, because Tidal existed.
$56 million in 2014.
Right. He actually wrote an open letter criticizing the people he acquired it from, saying that they had falsely stated the amount of subscribers they actually had.
What? That was after the acquisition?
After the acquisition.
What? How does that not come up in due diligence? Okay, granted, I have never bought a company and certainly not for like millions and millions of dollars. But don't you employ teams of people to do due diligence on this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I know. So it's kind of Jay's fault, really.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But then I don't know how the process works, whether they can actually look into your database or whether you have to take the numbers at face value. Because to be honest, I've been around where people have been potentially acquired. And the opening conversations at the very least are just like, tell us your numbers.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, can we look at your database and like...
Yeah.
So I don't know if what happens down the line...
You're doing some mergers and acquisitions over there, huh?
No, okay.
Don't forget us when
you're rich. I heard from a friend.
Let me use your private jet.
Take me to
Coachella.
we can ask Jeff Bezos next. She'll get us on the private jet. That's another story.
The reason why I think this Tidal story is really interesting, because I know this is only anecdotal data, but I don't know anyone that uses Tidal.
You know, when I went to America... People had Tidal.
Really?
Especially a lot of the black entrepreneurs that I met. Like,
oh, wow,
yeah,
okay.
I was opening up Spotify and they were opening up Tidal. And I was
okay.
I felt bad. I was like, you guys are really holding
proven
it down.
Proven wrong. Okay, cool.
I actually wanted to talk about this during the first episode, but I completely forgot. So my boy Jeff.
Bish better have my mom.
He's going through a divorce right now. So Mackenzie Bezos, the headlines say that she will now potentially be the richest woman in the world. And I saw a few people saying like, oh my God, like, you know, this is an insane amount of money to be given.
Yeah.
But
sign that prenup.
Yeah, listen, if you sign that prenup, it's your own default. And the problem is also is that, listen, don't get twisted. The total value of the Bezos is as they currently are. No one should have that amount of money in the world. Full stop. Yeah. Like $100 billion
is
insane.
Isn't it?
It's insane. So if someone's like, should this person have $50 billion? I mean, it's like the sheer sum of money we're talking about.
It's like unfathomable.
It's unfathomable anyway. So to me, it's like, who the hell cares?
$137 billion.
Just put a Nigerian accent on that one. Yeah. Yes, it's bananas. To argue against the people that were like, she doesn't deserve this. I read into it, the story, and they were married before he even started the business. She was an integral part in the early days of the business.
Behind every great man
is a great woman, the quotes goes. What would you do, Abba, with that kind of, if all of a sudden $50 billion now,
Mackenzie, if you're listening,
what would you do with that kind of sum of money? Like, it's insane. What can you do? I can't even
I'll
think
start replacing it. Toilet paper with Benjamin Franklin. I'm joking. Do you know what? Well, first of all, I would remember that more money, more problems, right? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be about trying to like hoard that or anything. I think for me, I mean, there's a reason why I do the work that I do. There's a reason why, I am in the space that I'm in. And, like, I very much live my life, like, in the service of others.
Mm.
So I would just think about how I can use that money to help those more vulnerable than me, with less privilege than me, who need more help than me.
Right.
Even though, like, I have a lot of privilege and I'm, like, more privileged than, like, other people that share my identity, there's still a lot of people in my family who could probably be more comfortable. Like, there's still people in my family that, like, worry about meeting their, like, basic material needs. So I think that's where I'd start because obviously, like, the people you love and you care about. But then I would just, like, just think about, you know, what else there is in the world I can fix. Like, there's that amazing study, right, which shows that basically once you're earning over, I think it's, like, 50,000 pounds or, like, $75,000.
Yeah.
the more money you get, like, you don't actually become that much more incrementally.
There's no difference in happiness levels, basically.
Boom.
Right.
Exactly. So knowing that, once I've got a house, I don't need to worry about mortgage. Like, once I can reduce all of my, like, recurring costs to, like, the minimal, I'll just start giving that stuff away. Random acts of kindness. Imagine this. Like, you just, like, start just depositing £1 million. Like, I would, like, maybe hack the housing system. Find out, like, all the people who need, like, housing benefits or stuff like that. Like, who are, like, the single moms, the single parents with, like, all these kids and mouths to feed. Pay some, like, amazing hacker to find their bank details. And then just start dropping in money. Just dropping in money. No one even know. What would you do?
You know what the thing is? I think it would be such a headache because then you'd have to... I would almost have to get a philosopher to work with me and be like, what is the optimal way that I could spend this money? Because...
I'll be your philosopher. Just pay me $1 billion. Okay, pay me one billion.
I thought you were an economist. You're always like, I'm an economist.
I'll be anything.
Like,
yeah. I'll be anything.
I mean, you need me to be.
I did philosophy A level. Does that count?
Nah, I need someone more qualified. I think I would just have a round table of the smartest people I could get.
Ooh, and I like that.
And then be like, guys, what can we do?
Board of advisors.
What is the maximum return on investment I can get to change the world, really? Because, yeah, doing random acts of kindness might be fantastic for that one individual, but maybe there's a way of spending that money in a way that kind of has a, you know, a more distributive, I think I've made up a word there, a more of a widespread outcome to help the more amount of people.
Just play God, just blow up the world and start again.
It's funny what you say, actually, about, like, I was laughing in my head when you were talking about how, you know, you still have family members that still need help. You know, it's so funny, whenever you're like a migrant of, like, African descent or whatever, you always got cousins back home that think you're, like, a millionaire. They're like, send me iPhone now, please.
Well, we are,
please.
And, like...
Send me iPhone now, please. I'm like, fam, how much money do you think I've got? Send me 2 iPhones. I'm like, bro, like, you know, we got bills out here. It's not the income might be higher, but so is the cost to live. Like, they just think you're so minted, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, that just made me laugh anyways.
So, yeah, I think to this story, it made me upset. I feel like there were, like, definitely some people kind of, like, showing elements of their, like, misogyny, like, their hatred of women.
Yeah, definitely.
In the way that they responded to it. Like, what? How dare she? And it's just like, you don't even know. Like, you don't even know. And, like, I really like that Arlen Hamilton kind of tweeted, like, I hope people respect this. Like, it seems really amicable.
Right.
You know, to be married that long, full stop, is something. Like, thank you. To be rewarded. And, you know, however it is, we're all our own individuals. We're all on our own journey. We come into this world alone. We leave alone. And, like, I think that's fine. We sometimes have to respect that. But, yeah, like, a lot of misogyny started coming out in people's responses to
this. Oh, definitely,
We got to, like, check ourselves as a society. We got, like, a long way to go. And then the second thing I'll say as well is just, like, yeah, sometimes we kind of forget that every person we see is still a composite of the people they're interacting with.
Mm.
Of course, Jeff Bezos is, like, an awesome dude, whatever, awesome entrepreneur. But it's not like he single-handedly achieved everything. Okay, so the internet went wild earlier in the week. Well, I guess when you guys are listening to this, it'll be last week. But Gillette had a new advert.
Right.
And, like, Gillette has always kind of, like, epitomized this, like, very... one-dimensional type of masculinity, like, I am a man with muscles and I am heterosexual and cisgender and I shave.
I love that voice, God. That's an amazing voice.
That's my, like...
Speak like that all the time from now on. The rest of the
that's
episode.
My basic bro voice.
Okay.
So now they come up with this huge departure from, like, previous brand messages where it's like, you have different types of men addressing all these different social issues. They're talking about bullying. They're talking about mental health. They're talking about violence and being like, no, we can do better. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Is this the best a man can get? Yeah. And then they're also going to pledge some money to one of these associations in America, like, not the Boy Scouts, because I think they've gone bankrupt.
The Boy Scouts?
Really messed up stuff. That's a whole other story. But basically... Pedophiles.
Are you swear down?
Yeah.
Rah, boy.
Go do the research. That's not techish, so we won't jump into that. But anyway,
Do your research, people.
Back to the Gillette ad. They released this campaign. It went viral, mostly because of the different responses to it. A lot of men who preferred the old branding were like, what? This is ridiculous. You're alienating your audience. Some other people were like, oh, a bit like... you know, Nike, Kaepernick, it's kind of like a jumping onto a bandwagon without really, truly supporting it. Because Gillette, which is part of Procter & Gamble, which makes millions and millions and millions of profits, hasn't necessarily, like, put any of that profit into things like supporting
yeah.
gay men communities, queer men communities, bullying for men, mental health for men, etc.
Yeah.
And then there are also some other people that were like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. Like for a brand that is so synonymous with one type of masculinity, it's nice to then see them expanding on it. But then some people have also said, even though they did, they could have gone further because it's still like quite heteronormative and cisgendered. Like there were no trans men in the advert.
Right, yeah.
Or anything like that. What are your thoughts?
I don't get why there was such a backlash to the advert. I mean, if that isn't targeted at you, it's not targeted yeah. at you. Like it's just saying sometimes as men, you got to check other men if they're doing something that's like, that's just not cool. Like, you, there's one bit in the advert where one guy is about to, like, catcall and run after the girl. And one guy's like, yo, bro, that's not cool kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you're only going to be offended by the, by those kind of things if you're the fool that's trying to act that way. You know what I mean? So I didn't take it as a thing. Some people are like, oh, it's an attack against masculinity. No, I didn't see it in that way whatsoever. Like, now, to me, the deeper question is that, what is going on now where a lot of brands now are trying to get woke? And my feeling is now is that, I don't know if they're doing it consciously, but if you go woke, that's a really silly phrase, way of putting it, but if you do a woke campaign, for example, you dominate the conversation to the point where you get the backlash and you get the pro support.
Yeah.
And the result is that you dominate the airwaves yeah. and it probably leads to greater sales. So it's like good business sense to just to kind of co-opt a cause or co-opt a message that you don't necessarily believe in. I don't know. It's to me, it's confusing. Because morally, you might say, well, if they're putting out a good message, why do we care?
Yeah.
If their intentions are not pure.
Yeah.
So on a philosophical level, if the outcome is good,
yeah.
who cares about the intention? But then...
I feel that... So an amazing writer and influencer who I follow, Yasmin, she's like Australian, Muslim, living in London. She did an amazing analysis of this where she basically said... Look, if you are an activist or interested in social justice issues, you already know about all the things that Gillette are talking about, right?
Right,
and she's like, but the thing is, generally speaking, mass market, mass audience, pop culture, people still aren't actually participating in conversations about social justice.
Right.
Or necessarily, like, putting any of their time or money or anything like into those causes. Like they might see it in the news, but like beyond it being like a news matter,
right?
It's not really in their consciousness.
Yeah.
And she was saying what's incredible about ad campaigns that do this is that they do take something like that and then use the medium of advertising to bring that conversation into the collective consciousness, into pop culture.
Right.
And that is powerful. And she's like, it's a shame that it has to happen when a big brand does it. But ultimately, it's still more effective than when, like, Black Lives Matter were trying to talk about it. Or, like, anti-bullying campaign were trying to talk about it. Or, like, let's say an organization like Stonewall are trying to talk about it.
Right.
So she was like, there's a value in that. Because, okay, fine, like you say, Gillette maybe are doing this. Ultimately, they just want to run a campaign that's going to get them attention and help them sell more razors,
worked.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, and it has worked. It's got them attention. But if it still moves the conversation forward and gets more people thinking about it and talking about it and bringing it to the openness, then maybe it is like a net good overall. I don't really have a strong opinion about it either way, if I'm honest. Like, I think this is like just another example of people jumping on this bandwagon. We're living in the age of opinion. We're living in the age of social impact. Like, if you talk to anyone that's involved in marketing or communications or everything, everyone's going to tell you the same thing. You have to have a cause. You have to have a cause. This is a time where you have to have a cause. Some people don't have a cause. If you don't have a cause, that's fine.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's okay.
That's
but,
true.
You know, we are living in the times where most people do and most people connect with that. And, of course, people are going to exploit that. And it's nothing new. It's nothing new. Like, propaganda has always existed. And then after Second World War... Freud's cousin called it peacetime propaganda, which is advertising.
Smart. You know what is actually funny, though, is the fact that there was a BBC article that was saying how it was titled Backlash to Gillette Advert. So when someone actually read the article and just said, like, let me look at their sources.
Yeah.
And their source for the backlash was one random tweet. And they looked, at the person's Twitter.
Classic account. Journalism.
They looked at the person's Twitter account. They had like 2 followers.
Oh, gosh.
And
Russian troll.
They had, yeah, I mean, it might as well have been. It might as well, it could have possibly have been. And that had led to a whole article on the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, one of the most legitimate, you know, media organizations in the world, right?
Journalism ain't what it used to
be. It ain't what it used to be. People are getting one random tweet and making a whole article about a supposed backlash based off that. So I'm also thinking that even that is not even, it wouldn't even surprise me if these corporations fabricate the backlash and say, go out there and make some kind of controversy. It wouldn't surprise me. Now, what you were saying about messaging, it's interesting because I was rewatching the Nike advert with Kaepernick. And if you notice, there was nothing in the actual advert about why he knelt. There was nothing in there about the actual causes of police brutality.
Interesting.
It was a very, and this at the time I was defending Nike, but when I rewatch it, it was a very milquetoast, just general stand up for what you believe in type thing.
Slice white bread.
Exactly, right? And it was nothing to do with the actual underlying message. Where at least this is actually talking about the actual social issue that is prevalent.
What, like toxic masculinity? Correct. And stuff like that. Yeah, right, okay. You can't.
This is straight nose on the head. This one, the Nike one, was like, we stand by Kaepernick. That's but we don't stand by what he believed in. We don't stand by what he believed in. We're not going to say anything critical about the way police behave. So when corporations do co-opt your message, they can do it in a way that can water down the message to the point where people even forget the original thing.
Yeah.
So a lot of people could tell you, oh, Kaepernick kneeled. Why did he kneel?
Yeah,
that takes a bit more thought for the average person now to even come up.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
You know what I mean? The other thing, there was another great advert that actually I preferred. Well, I didn't prefer, but I thought was much more well done and more original. It was by Air Mexico. So Air Mexico is an airline that obviously fly to Mexico. So they went to like the southern borders of the United States. They went to like Texas, whatever. And they said to people, what do you think about Mexico? They were like, oh yeah, you know, don't like it. Would you ever go to Mexico? Nah, we ain't never go to Mexico. Like real, like, you know, proud MAGA hat type people, right? And then they were like, okay, cool. And then they cut to images of Mexico and how beautiful it is. And I've been to Mexico. Mexico is such an amazing, such a beautiful country. If you don't want to go there,
shout out Mexico and my Mexican people. Love your food, love your culture, love your beaches.
And it was even funny because they were asking them, the initial question is, do you love tequila? Yeah. Do you
love burritos? Tequila.
Yeah. Would you ever go to Mexico? No. Anyways, yeah. But then they made them do a DNA test.
I like Mexico.
They made them do a DNA test. And they were like, whatever percentage of Mexico you are, we will give you discount to go to Mexico.
Oh, that's
some
so
people
cool.
were walking out like with like 18% discount because they were 80% Mexican.
And that's amazing.
You can see the conflict because they were like, oh my God, I'm Mexican and I get a discount. They wanted to hate themselves at the same time, but they were also like, ooh, I want that discount. One guy's like, can I bring my wife? So it was like, I don't know why. I thought
I
was a
do
much,
that test.
Yeah, why not?
No, seriously.
Oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Because that DNA issue is dangerous. Like, as
oh, they're going to steal my data.
Yeah. So, like, you know how we're like, Facebook data, like, that's like what you like. I'm talking about who you are to your person to a very cool. And, like, they sell that data. And also, there's been situations where people have been arrested based off the data
that,
23andMe have, for example. It might not be 23andMe, like,
but one of them.
But one of those types of companies. So, I was interested in doing that as well, but I just thought to myself, you know what, like, I don't even trust a corporation with my browser history, so why am I going to have fundamental ingredients to who I am as a human being?
I could have legit Mexican connections, though, because in the Philippines, a lot of, like, Spanish that were in Mexico moved from Mexico to the Philippines when there was, like, colonization, all that kind of stuff. I'm just saying, I don't mind going to Tulum on a discount.
I'll put the trailer in the show notes. For anybody that wants to get their Mexican heritage. Okay, cool.
Mexican heritage discount.
Yeah. So, Abbott, did you see the new Slack logo?
I did.
That doesn't sound too positive. What do you think of it?
It's actually really, like, nice. I'm starting to get used to it. But at first, I had the classic, like, human reaction to change, which was, I don't like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I really try to, like, change my relationship with
change.
Change. change. But it's inevitable. And yet, we always seem to not like it when it happens. I remember, you know, when we were at university, showing our age now, but, like, anytime the Facebook feed changed, people would be like, what is this now? Why?
You know, there was
Why?
A group.
And, like, when Instagram changed, I actually liked Instagram the other way. I know everyone's gonna
what
hate,
do you mean?
But when it was like you could swipe along like stories.
Oh, the new.
I
what
liked
do you mean?
That.
As in
the quote, air quotes mistake.
We didn't even talk about that because we were away. So basically, for anybody that doesn't know, for like half a day, Instagram pushed the change that apparently they weren't meant to push, and it was basically they made the timeline swipeable
like
left
stories.
And right, like stories and
tap.
Yeah, and you're right. To me, it made sense because it makes the product have less friction. So. But people just hated change and were like, oh my God. And they got rid of it straight away.
Yeah, I liked it because you could just, I feel like every four posts is an ad now. So for me, it was just like, instead of having to scroll past it, I could just be like, tap.
No, but you know what? The thing is, I think what they realized is that there's greater engagement on story ads than there is on timeline ads, right? So they kind of thought, how do we make the whole timeline more like stories?
Nice.
To make that's
because
sometimes
I don't realize I'm watching an ad.
Exactly.
Because you can't remember everyone you're following and people put random stuff in their story. So sometimes you're like, oh, that's so funny. Oh, cool. Wow, great. Putting your little your comments.
Right.
And then you're like, who's this?
Yeah.
What's that? And you're like, no, it's an ad.
Yeah. I mean, I always recommend to like people that I know that are toying with like social media ads to focus on Instagram stories.
Stories.
So I got a friend of mine, he's a musician, and he basically, I was like, yo, just do something where you're singing on your guitar and just do it on Instagram stories. Most people have their audio on when they're listening to stories as well, because you're just listening to your friends or watching your friends.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, and he had great engagement. Anyways, I digress. So yeah, the Slack logo change.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I mean, I don't have Slack on my phone. I'm escaping from the, I call it the notification industrial
Who
complex.
Are you?
The notification industrial complex. Like, I'm out, B. You can't message me.
Dismantling the industrial notification complex by Professor Michael Behane.
It's like your Gillette voice again. Yeah, so anyways, like.
That's my academic voice.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Someone was like, actually, like in the white space, it looks like a swastika. I was like.
Oh my gosh.
My mom was like, in the white space. You're looking at it now, right?
Oh, I didn't even. I mean, it's a stretch.
It's a stretch, but I could
also, swastika was around before Hitler.
All right, yeah.
It's culturally appropriated that.
Yeah, it's an ancient Hindu symbol, but come on, it's been muddied, unfortunately. But though, there's a great article by Wired talking about it, and I'll put it in the show notes. Basically, it says, and I can attest to this, when you start off as a startup, your logo is just done, just like. Do it quickly and paint, bro.
Do
it in paint, bro. Just pick a font and write it.
There's like AI logo generators now. Yeah, exactly. Like,
because ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody can spend 10 G's on a logo when you're first starting out.
Yeah.
So what happens is, because obviously the magic of startups is that you might end up being the next Uber. So all of a sudden, or Airbnb, or Slack, where your company goes from super tiny to all of a sudden you're a $1 billion unicorn.
Yeah.
And that logo that you made is now, you're stuck with it. So you see Airbnb did a rebrand, Uber did a rebrand, Slack did a rebrand. I mean, how often do you see bloody Procter & Gamble do a rebrand? They don't have to.
Mm.
But with these startups, they now have reached a scale that, you know, it's very difficult to fathom. So they have to invest in all these rebrands. And sometimes it's hit and miss. Like, we talked about Uber's rebrand way back in the day, last season. And we were like, not sure. But like you said, once you just get used to it, you don't even remember anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I think it's nice. I like the balance between like positive and negative space in it. I think it's also really interesting, something that we don't really think about, like logos are just something that's just like a given. You know, you're starting a company, like, hey, what's our name? What's our logo? And then even as a consumer, you just like start recognizing logos. But I think like the significance and the history of logos is like so interesting. This idea of like, let's say in the UK where we're living, you have like British history, like people had like their own coat of arms, you know, that would like signify a clan.
Right.
Like there's always been this like connection between like imagery and like what the imagery stands for.
But look at religions.
And religion as well.
A crucifix.
And it's that idea that like you can actually like communicate so much more with the image than you can with words. So suddenly with just like one glance, kind of like a picture says 1,000 words.
Completely.
You know, like who it is, what they stand for, what it connects to, what all the different elements are that play a meaning. So in a way, like I kind of like welcome people like evolving that, because I guess the company you are when you start, like not just from like a monetary perspective, but even from like a values perspective and a culture perspective, I guess maybe that evolves too. And there just comes a point when your logo doesn't necessarily like play truth to like who you now stand for.
So I just want to do a quick shout out to a young engineer based in Kenya called Roy Elela. He is straight pure African genius. He developed these gloves that you can put on and it turns sign language into voice via your smartphone device and allows deaf people to communicate with people who don't know sign language.
That's incredible.
And you know, it's amazing. It's just what can be capable and what can be created, in the African continent when people have the resources and are given the opportunities.
The gloves look cool as well.
The gloves look like the Michael Jackson gloves from Billie Jean. They do. So amazing. Like, it's a win all round.
So they connect via Bluetooth to an Android phone.
Right, yeah.
And the app will use text-to-speech capability to turn the sign language gestures into vocals.
Amazing.
Wow.
Shout out to him. I put the article in the show notes. And everybody check that out, please.
Also, on the topic of Kenya, just
thoughts
go out to anyone affected by the Nairobi attack.
Segment that I just completely made up on the spot. I'm gonna shout out people that have been using the hashtag techish and
what are you talking about, man? This is data driven insights. We've hired a bespoke consultancy
agency.
Yeah, exactly.
Called Michael Made It Up Agency. And so the first tweet I want to read is about last week we were talking about what black culture films should come back.
Somebody
was like, to answer your question, there should be a sequel to New Jack City about the power vacuum caused by Nino Brown's death.
Thank you, Spencer Taylor. I'm going to have to watch New Jack City.
We're going to both have to watch New Jack City, but it's supposed to be a British thing because I ain't really like seen it. So, but yeah, we're both going to watch that and find out if you're right.
I got another shout out here from Sanyu Sirwada. She came across Tekish on LinkedIn and thought it was a show. Okay, TV producers, Netflix. Oh, like,
my boy was shouting us out and someone said to him, I was looking on Netflix and I couldn't find it. So like, it literally sounds like a TV show. So anyone who wants to make this into a TV show, holler at us right now.
I'm ready. Where can I cop them t-shirts? Tekishpod.com.
And one last shout out has to go to his Twitter handle is MicahPPLS. He actually did a freestyle for Tekish. He was so excited about the new season of Tekish. He did a freestyle. I'm going to play it right now if my phone battery don't die. So he deserves a shine for this one. Play, please.
Yeah, tell me what's up, yeah. And I'm from that H-Town, so you know what's going down. South of Salem, Texas, and I'm in a nexus. Cause I'm in between the tech and the blackness. Tech and the blackness, looking kind of Tekish.
Yeah,
you hear that? Looking kind of Tekish. I've been saying that all day. Yeah, shout out to you, man. Thank you for the freestyle.
Thank
if anybody
you.
Else wants to do a freestyle, send it.
Please.
We might actually play it.
Mama, I made it. I'm in a freestyle.
So that wraps up this episode of Tekish. Use the hashtag Tekish. You might get a shout out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, show love to our sponsors. You know, like, it's so rare and difficult for an independent black-owned podcast to get sponsors. So show them love. Tell them that Tekish sent you.
Exactly. Hit up Blockstack. Hit up One Tech.
Yeah, we love you guys. And
hit us up on socials. Hashtag Tekish.
Hashtag Tekish. Hit up Abadesi at Abadesi and then me at Michael Behane _. And yeah, share the podcast and we'll see you next week.
Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Ciao.